We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Audacy put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Audacy. Visit ads.audacy.com.
Let's go right out to the Hall and Capitas fan hotline. There's nobody better on baseball than this guy, Joel Sherman of the New York Post. Joel, I know you're very busy. You are the Adam Schefter in some ways of Major League Baseball. You could be taking a call at any moment, so we appreciate you taking the time.
I decided to take this call. Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. So let me read you a tweet here from Bob Nightingale, who I'm sure you know well. Despite all the animosity and bitterness between MLB and the Players Union in the early stages, there will be baseball this season. It may not start July 4th, but it will happen. You'll see. Do you share that optimism, Joel?
I mean, I generally think that, but I bet you if we tweeted something at an equivalent time in 1994, we would have said, well, there's no way they're going to cancel the World Series, right? That would be an historic thing. They'd understand the importance of finding moderation and compromise and really negotiating. And a World Series was lost. And so there is precedent for the two playing chicken and nobody blinking. That being said, if you were an optimist right now, you would say this looks very much like every business negotiation there is specifically in baseball. Let's just start with the rudimentary in capitalism, right? Owners of businesses want to get the most productivity for the least cost possible. The workers want to get the most pay and the best working conditions. That's all businesses, including baseball. And what we have learned since the union became certified as a union, the Players Association, in 1966, is these two sides are going to fight about money. They're going to do it hard. They're probably going to do it publicly. And then, if you're an optimist, even in 1994, it took them until 1995, they reach an agreement at some point. What's unfamiliar is trying to do this in a very condensed period of time with a pandemic still hospitalizing and killing a lot of people, with the national economy in a real downturn with a lot of people unemployed. And what are the external pressures of those realities on the two sides to do something, you know, like what is the damage to baseball within those confines if they don't solve it, which is why I think ultimately they will, because it's going to be such a cost on both of their houses and so destructive to the long-term finances, not to mention just the 2020, that it is. I think it behooves both sides to figure out a way to get the game play.
Joel, how does it figure into, forget just this season, but next season with the CBA up after next year and free agency coming up? I mean, I'm sure the players have zero faith and trust in the owners. What do you see happening down the road?
Well, that's why I think it's so important that they not get myopic. I just posted a column on nypost.com about the need for everybody to kind of get to 20,000 feet and see the big picture, which is, no matter what the arrangement is this year, if they're able to make an arrangement for this year, I would strongly assume that arbitration with non-tenders, and especially free agency, is going to take substantial beatings as revenues are down in the sport. So I think the Players Association, if it can, I should try to see what could be traded maybe short-term to improve their long-term situation. At a moment where they might have some leverage, by the way, because I do think the commissioner of baseball very much wants to get the game back on the field. So in exchange for, I don't know, raising the minimum wage somewhat substantially over the next few years, maybe up towards $1 million, it's in the 560 range right now. But if you're, you know, 750,000 next year, 900,000 the year after, removing luxury tax penalty thresholds and the penalties, you know, so that if a team at the top of the market did want to spend in a tough market, they wouldn't feel the double penalty of a luxury tax. And so some of the players at the top of the market might get some money, even in a tough time. I just think that if there were people of goodwill here, they'd sit down and figure out a way to work through this, understanding that the sport is going to be hurt financially in the near future. We don't know if there even are going to be spectators at the game next year, or the numbers, not only because we don't know if there will be a vaccine for the virus, but with the massive unemployment and salary cuts, is there going to be disposable income for ordinary fans to go to a ballpark? Or will there be, even with some kumbaya now, a significant loss of attendance next year? And with that, I would say that these two sides who historically don't work well together should probably figure out some ways to work together to assure their corporate partners in TV and business that this is still going to be a healthy, thriving game with cooperative sides here, and that there are ways to make some money over the next few years to make it better for everyone.
Joel Sherman of the New York Post. Joel, who's right about the March 26th agreement? The players say it was decided there. We're getting our prorated salaries. The owners say there was language in that, quote, agreement that allowed for some alterations here in the case of no fans. Who's right?
So let's say that they both feel that they're right. I would, and I had to determine the jump ball. I would determine the jump ball this way by saying, you know, I think I was the first one to report that there was an email that was sent internally at MLB that they had spoken to two top officials at the union the morning of March 26th before an agreement was signed. And the union asked for clarification of what that meant. MLB told them what it meant. The union said, oh, we thought that was the case. Is part of the reporting, the Players Association responded about that in a pretty long response by Bruce Meyer, who's the lead negotiator. But nowhere in that response does it say that that conversation never took place. So to me, if I had to decide to jump ball, I would probably say that. And the other thing that would make me wonder is the owners did give full service time to the players this year, no matter what, including if there are zero games played. And that seems a pretty significant give back. What did they get in return? I'm assuming they thought they got in return the right to negotiate a new economic reality if the games were played before no fans. That being said, having a new economic conversation just means having a new economic conversation. I think it's within the players' rights to come in and ask for their full prorated pay and make a case. By the way, one of those cases could be, hey, since we last negotiated this, 100,000 Americans have died of this virus, and you're asking us to take on some risk to go play. Not only do we think we should get the prorated amount, we should get more. It's just a matter of should they be negotiating about economic feasibility without fans. The owners claim that's 40% of their revenue. The players claim they will make plenty of money anyway, and why should they support them in bad times since the owners don't raise their pay in, you know, years where the revenue goes significantly up? So I understand the positions of both sides. Again, I would encourage that it probably is in everyone's best interest to get into a room, figure it out, and not get locked in on just 2020 pay.
Joe, so what's the bottom line here? How is this solved? I mean, is there some way to get an agreement? Is there some way to get compromise?
Yeah, I think I've kind of been a couple of answers here suggested. I think the compromise is about not being myopic and not just looking at this as a 2020 issue, because it's not a 2020 issue. I would say that they are just enemies, and they're enemies again, the union and the Players Association. But the reality is they do have a common enemy, and the common enemy is the virus. And this might be a moment to suggest that the enemy of my enemy is my friend, and for them to work through, because the virus is going to cause great losses, has already, for just not to mention, of course, what's going on in the country with health and life and finances for ordinary people. But it's going to cause great disruption to the game. We don't know if and when the virus is going to kick back in a stronger way in some cities. I'm in New York right now. The numbers have been going down. We don't know if the numbers are going to go back up, making it impossible to play here. We don't know if it's going to be impossible to play before fans next year in spring training of the regular season. So I think the answer to trying to work this out together is to understand they have a common enemy, which they must negotiate around to try to make the game as popular and flush with cash as possible for both of their goods. And this is a moment to probably work together on the long-term strategy, how to do that against the common enemy.
Will deferred payments ultimately be part of this, do you think, Joel?
I mean, again, I think people of goodwill can sit down and come up with many mechanisms that could make both sides feel like what I think what both sides have to come to comfort with is there's not going to be winners this year. But everyone's a loser. There's no winning this year. The winning is if you could get on the field, play a full season to completion with a champion, that would feel like a great victory for the whole sport. But, you know, we're not playing a full season. We're not going to play before fans, at least to start this, if we're able to play. This is great loss this year. And I think, I mean, I cannot say it enough. I think you have to look to the times where you can have victory, which is the future. Now, is that partially to maybe you give a player an option? Would you rather 75% pay today or 100% pay over 5 years? I mean, again, I think people of goodwill could sit down and decide how to divvy up what still will be a couple of billion dollars this year if they're able to play for a few months and through the postseason. But that's going to have to take some goodwill and bigger picture vision than just what am I making for the rest of this season.
Joel, I hear you talk about goodwill, but it's hard to see that as a possibility with these two sides. Okay, say a deal was done. Do you still see some players not play, whether out of health risks or just saying, I'm not going to play this year? Do you see that as a possibility?
Yeah, I think it's a possibility. And look, just to go back to your previous statement, like we don't see a lot of goodwill. There's never goodwill, and they come and they do a collective bargaining agreement every 5 years or so. They actually do come to agreement without ever fully trusting one another because it's their job to come to an agreement. It is their job right now to come to an agreement. This is what they're empowered to do. The players empower the union to do this. The owners empower Central Baseball and the commissioner's office to do this and negotiate to their best end a deal, but to come to a deal, right? There's no upside for either side in not playing. So I don't know that there has to be linked arms and singing of songs here. The goodwill is about understanding that the golden goose becomes a lot smaller goose if a meaningful game isn't played between October of 2019 and the late March of 2021. That is going to be such a bigger financial calamity than anything about just simply what happens between now and the end of a season, whether it's played or not. I just think that the lack of continuity, the ability of fans to turn to do other things, I know people will point to 1994 and say, well, the fans came back in full and larger than ever after that. And I would say, yes, a lot of that had to do with Cal Ripken not playing right now. A lot of that had to do with steroids. Would you like to revisit that? The hope that the fans are going to come back in when there are so many more things that to grab the attention, you know, like I don't remember esports in 1994-95. And so that's a dangerous game for both of them to play to just do chicken. The goodwill is just the beginning with the process of we are going to find a solution. Now let's go sit in a room and find a solution. That's the goodwill.
Joel, thank you so much for taking the time. Your stuff is up at nypost.com, the New York Post. Great stuff, including today's piece. Thank you so much.
All right, guys. I hope you and your listeners are well.
Now with the MLB app, you can get baseball your way. Pick your favorite team, your favorite players, and get customized highlights, stories, and breaking news right on your home feed. Follow the action with Game Tip, where 3D replays add another dimension. Plus, notifications can keep you connected to every pitch, every hit, every game. The MLB app. Baseball, your way. Download it now for free from the App Store or Google Play. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.